powerful, important figures kind of darting in and out of his life. And obviously there is an enormous amount of interest, rightly so, in what these files show, if anything, about how Epstein's sex trafficking operation ensnared some of these kind of bold-faced names. The truth is, and I'm not trying to be coy or evade the question, we just really have no idea what is in these files and what is going to actually be released in a way that is legible. And I think there is an expectation or a concern that these might be very, very heavily redacted if they get released at all. And hopefully I'm wrong about that, because I think the whole world is clamoring for some transparency here. And I, just as someone who's been covering this for like six plus years now with my colleagues at the Times, we are really eager to see what's in these files.
And finally, what surprised you most as you investigated him for all of these years? We just have 30 seconds.
I think what surprised me the most was just how pedestrian some of his scams were. This is not someone who is hatching this like extremely elaborate plot to con sophisticated people through this, all these like bells and whistles. He was just grabbing people's money and running with it. And for all of the attention that's been paid to the possibility of Epstein being part of spy services or running this really sophisticated blackmail operation, the truth that we found, and there may be more to it, but what we found was much more run of the mill and kind of low level than that.
David Enrich, we want to thank you for being with us, Deputy Investigations Editor for The New York Times. We'll link to your new investigation, Scams, Schemes, Ruthless Cons, The Untold Story of How Jeffrey Epstein Got Rich. Happy birthday to Jeff Stauch and happy belated birthday to Renee Feltz. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Don't know what to get your loved ones this season? Check out kboo.fm/merch to snag some KBOO swag to support community media in style. While you're shopping for gifts, you can make donations to help support KBOO's $75,000 goal for our KBOO Fights Back campaign, now through December 31st.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, Multnomah County Chair Jessica Vega Peterson won't run for re-election next year.
Oregon Farm Workers Union, PCUN, and Oregon for All call for a general strike for the day without an immigrant.
And New Seasons workers ratify their first union contract after 3 years of negotiations.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, December 17th, 2025. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Terrence Burns.
And I'm Josh Salem. Multnomah County Chair Jessica Vega Peterson won't run for re-election next year. That leaves the race for county chair wide open. Vega Peterson has faced significant backlash in her time as chair since taking over in 2023. The county's struggle with houselessness has been a sticking point, with concerns it isn't spending its money effectively. In a video announcement, she says it wasn't a decision she made lightly. She said, quote, "I knew the road ahead would be hard, and it has been. These past few years have tested all of us. I've made tough calls. I've taken hits. That's part of the job," end quote. Vega Peterson highlighted some of her accomplishments, including expanding 24/7 homeless shelters and opening a new behavioral health resource center. A poll from the Oregonian last year put Vega Peterson as the local official with the lowest approval rating.
More than 1,900 immigrant Oregonians have been detained by ICE this year, and immigrant rights advocates are calling for Oregonians to pause all economic activity tomorrow, Thursday, December 18th, as part of the Day Without an Immigrant actions. Organizers are asking Oregonians to stand against what they call unlawful attacks on immigrant communities. Isabel Charlet reports.
are calling for a work and school stoppage day tomorrow in order to show support for immigrant communities that are threatened by increased immigration and customs enforcement presence in the state. Oregonians are asked to avoid all economic activities, including work and shopping, for 24 hours tomorrow to push back against what organizers call cruel and illegal tactics by ICE agents under the Trump administration. PICCUN Executive Director Reyna Lopez says immigrants are the backbone of the state's economy.
We are the beating heart of the American workforce. Immigrants are essential workers who wake up every day to feed and care for Oregon families. We are the people who cook your food. We care for your gardens. Our hands tend to grapes that bubble your favorite wines.
Lopez says tomorrow will be the first of 8 monthly blackout days leading up to May Day in 2026. She adds more than 1,900 immigrant Oregonians have been detained by ICE this year and says most have been denied access to an attorney for days or weeks. Those in favor of mass deportations argue tougher policies are necessary to manage the unauthorized immigrant population. Sandy Chung with the ACLU of Oregon says it's important that every person and family make the choices that are right for them in terms of skipping school or work tomorrow. But she thinks people's actions must match the severity of the situation.
They're physically assaulting our neighbors. They're kidnapping them regardless of citizenship status. They're locking them up. It is a very dire situation.
Tomorrow is also the federal court hearing for PICCUN's lawsuit against the Department of Homeland Security and ICE to ensure that people arrested by ICE have access to legal representation. For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
Hundreds of Portland students walked out of class yesterday to protest ICE brutality. Some made their way down to City Hall, while other students, like those at McDaniel High School, protested closer to their building. KBOO's Anna Wilcox spoke to some of the students who decided to walk out.
You organized this whole thing?
Yeah.
So what? Why did you organize it?
Well, I organize this because we have students and I have family and friends that can't speak up because they're in fear constantly. And I want ICE to stay away from our schools because they have been tormenting PPS District. And also the violence against immigrants inside of facilities is terrible. They're not being given due process, which is unconstitutional. And I want to be able to speak for those who can't.
You know, we've had a lot of families here in Portland that are, you know, constantly being ravaged and torn apart by ICE agents. And, you know, we're just not talking about it enough, so it's time we finally take a stand on it as students and, you know, let our voices be heard.
I think what ICE is doing is going way past, like, what people are, like, I don't know, guys, but ICE is just going way too far, and I think it's a really big problem.
Yeah. So, hi, my name's Tier Jim Badon, and I'm out here today protesting against ICE because we don't like ICE and they need to leave everybody alone and stop spreading hate. It's not helping nobody. And that's just my personal opinion. Some people may not agree with me, but we don't really care what you think. You're irrelevant.
I just think that it's like really awesome that we're able to like speak up against this since it's like immigrants are being really oppressed right now, and I just don't think that it's right that they're being like stripped from their families when they work hardworking, laboring jobs for our country. And are seriously like helping us and are human beings too and don't deserve to be going through what they are going through.
I feel like it just really speaks volume, especially like this area, even though it's kind of like clear today, even just like, and like not a lot of people are seeing us, it's just important for like people to know that like they're not alone and people actually care about what's going on.
One student speaker addressed the crowd saying, quote, "When I look out at all of this, I don't see young, dumb kids. I see young kids who want to stand up for what they believe in and stand up for our Portland community," end quote. This follows other student walkouts earlier this month in the Portland area. Hundreds of Washington County students left school on December 8th, also to protest ICE aggression.
A few weeks ago, December 17th, today, was scheduled to be the beginning of a holiday season strike for unionized New Season workers. Instead, workers with the New Season's labor union are celebrating the ratification of their first ever contract, something that's been years in the making. New Season's labor union started organizing in 2022 and began bargaining with the company soon after. They set a deadline of December 4th, telling the company to come to a tentative agreement by then or the workers would go on strike the week before Christmas, some of the busiest shopping days of the year. Negotiations had stalled in October and November, but on December 2nd, New Seasons offered something much closer to what the union wanted. Union members voted to ratify the contract Tuesday. The new contract guarantees a $19 an hour starting wage, with raises for workers who stay with the company, and cost of living adjustments built into the contract. Workers also maintained the structure of their health insurance, which they qualify for once they work 24 hours a week. New Seasons Labor Union started as an independent union, but recently became affiliated with United Electrical and Machine Workers of America, giving them more leverage they should have to go on strike. 10 New Seasons locations in the Portland area are unionized, 12 are not.
Portland City Council staffers plan to unionize with the Communications Workers of America, CWA, Local 7901. They include council aides and operations staff, people who organize schedules, advise on policy, and communicate with the public. Workers told the Portland Mercury that the government transition they've been working through has been challenging, and they hope that unionizing will create better structure. They say they want clear job descriptions and a cap on how many hours they work each week. Their press release says their union, quote, is an apolitical organization representing council staff across offices and viewpoints. The union is not focused on advancing policy agendas or influencing legislative outcomes. Instead, its mission is to ensure that council staff feel safe, protected, and supported in their roles, conditions that are crucial to the effective functioning of Portland City Council. End quote. The city employs workers from a number of unions, but council aides have not previously been represented.
A Miami-based private equity firm is set to buy the embattled Zenith Energy Terminal in Portland. The company is called I-Squared Capital, and they announced their plans to buy the terminal Tuesday. Both Zenith and I-Squared are privately owned, so it's not publicly known how much the terminal that will sell for. I-Squared says they will abide by Zenith's current commitments to the city, transitioning to renewable fuel storage by October 2027. The Department of Environmental Quality approved Zenith's new air quality permit in October, allowing it to continue operating for the time being. But a court battle over Portland's land use permit for the terminal continues, with the Oregon Court of Appeals overturning a decision affirming the city's approval, sending it back to Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals. So Portland could be saying goodbye to Zenith, but not in the way advocates may have hoped for. The terminal will likely change its name when the sale goes through. Nick Caleb, attorney with climate justice organization Breach Collective, told the Oregonian, quote, no matter who owns this facility, Portlanders will continue to fight the expansion of dangerous liquid fuel storage on the site, end quote.
House Republican leaders won't allow a vote on extending health insurance subsidies. The White House defends strikes on alleged drug trafficking boats and escalates the conflict with Venezuela. And interfaith groups press for an end to lethal injection. With those stories and more, it's Zimone Perez with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy and historic times.
It's idiotic and it's political malpractice. The fact is that we have a time-sensitive issue, which is the expiration of these enhanced premium tax credits.
Moderate New York Republican Mike Lawler is blasting GOP House leaders for not allowing a vote on extending Affordable Care Act subsidies. When they lapse in the new year, premiums will rise dramatically. A leadership healthcare bill is headed to the floor and includes regulation of pharmacy benefit managers and funds for cost sharing. Republicans from competitive districts try to negotiate for a vote on an amendment extending the tax credits, but haven't gotten one. New figures show weak employment growth, with the U.S. losing 100,000 jobs in October and adding 64,000 in November. Although the unemployment rate ticked up, Vice President J.D. Vance insists things are moving in a good direction.
We are sick of rewarding companies that ship jobs overseas. We're going to reward companies that build right here in America and give Americans good wages to do it.
Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth says the Pentagon won't publicly release the full video of a controversial September strike on an alleged drug boat, but will let selected members of Congress review it. Critics accuse Hegseth of directing the operation where survivors clinging to burning wreckage were intentionally killed. House Majority Leader Steve Scalise says he supports the strikes, arguing they'll help stem the flow of drugs.
They know you get on a boat filled with cocaine to come and kill Americans, to poison our people. You're not going to make it here. You're not going to make it here alive, and your drugs aren't going to make it to our shores. And ultimately, that's what we want to see.
Reports say nearly 100 people have died in 25 airstrikes. A federal judge says the Trump administration can go ahead with demolition of the White House East Wing for a new ballroom. Preservationists have sued to stop the project, and the court says the administration will have to submit architectural plans for review within 2 weeks. President Donald Trump says the cost of the project has risen to $400 million. White House Chief of Staff Susie Wiles is grappling with a profile in Vanity Fair that quotes her as critical of the president, attorney general, and vice president. Wiles hasn't denied making the statements, but says she was taken out of context, calling the article, quote, a disingenuously framed hit piece. Interfaith groups in Indiana are calling on the governor to redirect the millions the state has spent on lethal injection drugs. Since 2023, the state has spent $2 million on pentobarbital, but it has a short shelf life, and the governor says they might not replace it. Jody English with the Indiana Abolition Coalition says there are better ways to spend such money.
If the money that was spent on the death penalty and the pursuit of the death penalty was freed up, perhaps we as a people would have more mental health services, more addiction services.
Two people were executed in the state this year. Support for capital punishment, especially among younger people, continues to decline. I'm Zabon Perez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KABU Evening News. Our goal is to raise $75,000 by December 31st. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KABU membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Laura Grimes from Oregon Arts Watch. At 6, it's Sea Change Radio. At 6:30, it's Free Culture Radio. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be rainy, with an overnight low of 44. And tomorrow, that rain continues with a daytime high of 56. Today in history, in 1903, the Wright brothers made the first controlled power heavier-than-air flight in the Wright Flyer at Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. The quote of the day is from English actor Sir Herbert Beerbohm Tree, who said, quote, "Never say a humorous thing to a man who does not possess humor. He will always use it in evidence against you," end quote.
A new climate report card for the Arctic from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, shows concerning trends when it comes to temperatures and melting. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Arctic continues to warm faster than other parts of the world and is experiencing record high temperatures and record low levels of sea ice. That's according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, which released its annual report card for the region Tuesday. The Alaska Desk's Ayona Niden reports those findings directly affect Alaska indigenous communities.
The Arctic report card has been documenting changes in snow and sea ice cover, as well as air and ocean temperatures in the northern part of the globe for the past 20 years. It has shown that in that time, the Arctic's annual temperature has increased at more than double the global rate of temperature changes. Hannah Marie Ladd is the director of Indigenous Sentinels Network.
These changes cascade directly into people's lives, affecting fisheries, coastal safety, and subsistence harvests. We are no longer just documenting warming. We are witnessing an entire marine ecosystem, which is tied to our economies and culture, transform within a single generation.
The report highlights an emerging phenomenon called rusting rivers. That's when permafrost thaw causes groundwater to seep deeper and interact with mineral deposits, which likely turns some streams and rivers to a rusty orange color. Abigail Pruitt says that in Alaska, over 200 streams turned orange in recent years.
Within Kobuk Valley National Park, we observed the complete loss of juvenile Dolly Varden and Slimy Sculpin in a tributary to the Akilik River when it turned orange. Beyond the effects on fish, resting rivers may impact drinking water supplies to rural communities as well.
The report highlights how Indigenous communities have been observing the changes in the environment and wildlife and collaborating with scientists to better understand those changes. Ladd with the Indigenous Sentinels Network describes one example of such work. St. Paul residents collect samples of harvested traditional foods, like seabirds, marine mammals, and halibut. Those samples are tested in a tribally owned lab and analyzed for contaminants like mercury.
Indigenous leadership, local workforce development, and community-driven observing are not optional. They are essential to understanding the Arctic that we have today and preparing for the Arctic we are moving into.
In response to your question about how federal cuts to climate science might affect the future of the Arctic report card, NOAA officials said that they will continue their efforts to observe the change in environment. In Anchorage, I am Alona Naiden.
Two tribal communities in New Mexico will be receiving state grants for high-speed internet development. KUNM's Jeanette Didios has more.
Santa Clara Pueblo and the Fort Sill Apache Tribe will each receive a planning grant of $100,000 through the New Mexico Grant Writing, Engineering, and Planning Program. In a release, the state's Broadband Policy and Programs Bureau Chief, Andrew Wilder, said the funding will help start important projects in tribal regions that lack high-speed internet. Santa Clara will use its grant to build fiber lines connecting homes and provide Wi-Fi service. Fort Sill plans to create a high-speed broadband network connecting unserved homes. The tribe has already secured $500,000 in infrastructure funding for fiber, equipment, and trenching. The state's Office of Broadband has already issued 36 awards totaling $3.5 million to 17 tribal communities, 15 local governments, and 4 rural electric and telephone businesses. The broadband office stated that $1.5 million are still available in planning grants. The awards are assistance-based, not merit-based, so entities do not compete for funding. No matching funds are required.
For National Native News, I'm Jeanette Didios.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
At least 95 people have been killed so far by U.S. airstrikes on boats in the Caribbean and Eastern Pacific, according to a new report from Amnesty International. The report says, quote, intercepting purported drug boats is a law enforcement operation subject to policing standards derived from international human rights law, which holds that all people have the right to life and to a fair trial, and only allows states to use lethal force when an imminent threat to life exists and less extreme means, like capture, are insufficient. The report continues, quote, a state intentionally killing someone outside of those circumstances is committing an extrajudicial execution, no matter what crime the person is alleged to have committed, end quote. President Trump declared a blockade on all sanctioned oil tankers approaching and leaving Venezuela. Trump wrote, quote, Venezuela is completely surrounded by the largest armada ever assembled in the history of South America. In response, the Venezuelan Navy escorted several ships loaded with oil-based products last night and this morning as they left the country headed to Asia. It was not eminently clear whether those ships were on the list of vessels under U.S. sanctions and subject to the blockade.
After last night's strong winds, particularly on the north coast, over 130,000 Oregon homes were without power. Around 26,000 homes in the Astoria-Warrenton area lost power, and schools there and in Seaside were closed this morning. Several highways in northwest Oregon were closed due to fallen trees and power lines, including US 26 at Zigzag in Government Camp. And tomorrow could bring 2 inches of rain and wind gusts up to 38 miles per hour. Another atmospheric river is on the way, and a flood watch is in effect for northwest Oregon and southwest Washington. Rivers are already high, and soils are quite saturated after the previous rain, meaning there's a risk of flooding. Friday should have light winds and just a little rain.
As Washington State faces record-breaking flooding, advocates are calling for paid hazard leave for farm workers who are not able to work during extreme weather events. Washington has seen two farm workers die in the last 8 years because of extreme heat and flooding. Isabel Charlet has more.
Record-breaking floodwaters continue to wreak havoc on communities across Washington state, and farm workers are some of the hardest hit. Governor Bob Ferguson has declared a statewide emergency and estimates 100,000 residents could face evacuation orders. Rosalinda Guillen of Community to Community Development explains that migrant farm workers face a difficult choice. They risk dangerous flooding if they stay at work, yet many cannot afford to lose even a single day's pay. Guillen quotes one worker she spoke with recently.
She said, I'm a single mom. I'm not going to be able to make the rent because I'm missing these 2 days of work. Our communities are living paycheck to paycheck, so there's a huge impact when they can't work.
Guillen says migrant workers need to be eligible to receive paid hazard leave for extreme weather events in Washington, and her organization will be pushing for that in the upcoming legislative session. Guillen says two farm workers have died from extreme weather events in the last 8 years in Washington. Ernesto Silva Ibarra passed away from heat and wildfire smoke while working, and Jose Garcia was swept away by floodwaters on his way to work in 2021. Guillen adds migrant farm workers are often living in rentals that are not well protected from flooding. She says during the last major flood in 2021, many homes were damaged and the landlords could not afford to fix them.
There already isn't enough housing for everybody in our area in Waccamaw County. So then what happens to these families that are left houseless because of these climate crises?
Guillen says her organization is collecting donations to support farm workers and their families who are affected by the flooding. For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Sometimes the people we love spread misinformation, but what can we do? One expert advises leading with empathy. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. False and misleading information about climate change is widespread on social media, and it can be hard to know how to respond when a friend or loved one believes that misinformation and shares it.
It is often much better to take these conversations offline and talk to people that you know by building on the strength of your relationship and your connections. Ask them about their post, why they believe it, and then try to understand their motivation in sharing this content before focusing on the content itself.
That's Elise Martin, Manager for Persuasion Research and Campaigns at the Environmental Defense Fund. She says people often believe misinformation because it resonates with them emotionally. For example, someone stressed about money might be more likely to believe false claims about the cost of clean energy.
A lot of people who share disinformation may be feeling afraid or as if circumstances are out of their control.
So as you share factual resources, she suggests doing so with empathy, not as a lecture, but as a dialogue based on trust and connection.
Just trying to understand, like, what are the emotional stakes for this person might help you get farther in conversation with them.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
KBOO news poet Dan Raphael knows what he doesn't want for Christmas.
A Hanukkah festival in Sydney, Brown University. I hear of people being shot dead almost every day, and I only hear about a fraction of them. And that's here in America, in Australia, and other places not yet official war zones. Big Shot, Outside Shot, Shoot the Moon, Top Gun, so much weaponized language. What prophet, what person of peace would carry a gun? Yeah, peacekeepers get shot, so do warmongers. Bullets, like every other weapon, have no other purpose. Can't think of anything else to do. Bite the bullet before it bites you. Many public killings are spurred by hate or other forms of mental illness, but the majority of people killed by guns knew the person who killed them. Most people who own a gun own more than one. There's enough people wary and in hiding here in America due to ICE and Trump. We don't need to worry about who got a new gun or maybe just a knife for Christmas and wants to try it out. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
Yeah. You're listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael and Anna Wilcox. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Antonia Gonzalez, Simone Perez, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Terrence Burns. All of our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $75,000 by December 31st. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO's News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm joined by Laura Grimes, Executive Director at Oregon Arts Watch, to talk about some of the latest arts news. Welcome, Laura.
Thanks for having me, Althea.
Yeah, thank you for being with us. So we're getting into some of the latest and greatest from Oregon Arts Watch. This first story is called Why the Oregon Cultural Trust Matters by Claire Willett. Let's answer that question for folks who don't know. What is the Oregon Cultural Trust and why does it matter?